Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. What a pleasure this morning to bring on Ron Shelton, and of course, a very famous name in the theatrical world. Ron is now an author, and he, of course, as we remember him with Bull Durham, it launched a writing-directing career that includes White Men Can't Jump, Blaze, Cobb, and Tin Cup, among other films. He's also directed Jordan Rides the Bus, a documentary about Michael Jordan's year in the minor leagues. Ron Shelton, great to have you with us. The book is The Church of Baseball, The Making of Bull Durham, Home Runs, Bad Calls, Crazy Fights, Big Swings, and a Hit. Wow. Great to have you with us, Ron. How are you?
I'm good, but that title's a little too long, don't you think?
Well, it's great. How does it make you feel when people say Bull Durham is their favorite baseball movie of all time?
Well, I'm thrilled, and I'm amazed that after all this time, 35 years, people are still talking about it, and it seems to have gone up in how it's remembered and recalled. And we were just, as the book says, I was just trying to stay on schedule and not get fired at the time.
Well, it's a great book, and it goes through the making of the movie, and it also goes through your background. And look, I've done these shows for a long time. Anyone who gets involved with baseball on the level you are or gets involved with broadcasting, whatever it is, has to have a great passion for baseball and a great history with baseball. You bring that to the movie. Tell us about your baseball background, and we'll go from there.
Well, like many kids on the West Coast, when I was a kid, there's no major league team out here. So we would go to occasionally L.A. Angel games or occasionally Hollywood Star games. I was at a San Francisco Seals game when I was up there visiting relatives. So the minor leagues was it for us, especially the PCL. But we were Dodger fans because my mom went to high school with Jackie Robinson. And when the Dodgers and the Giants moved out here, it was sort of unbelievable to a kid that now I could actually go see this stuff. I grew up in Santa Barbara. My childhood hero was Eddie Matthews, who was from Santa Barbara. So me and every other family and kid in Santa Barbara were Milwaukee Braves fans. And there's a lot about that in the book, too, how Eddie Matthews impacted me.
Well, you tell a great story about Eddie Matthews and your dad and how Eddie Matthews in that 57 World Series was a big part of your life when you realized baseball was more important than church that day. And, of course, Eddie had the big home run to win a game in extra innings and made the great backhanded catch on Bill Scourin to really win the World Series. So Eddie Matthews had a big part of your life, and then you ran into him. We'll jump ahead a little bit. You did see him at some point.
Well, I did. First of all, you know, I won the Eddie Matthews bat. That was the trophy for having the best batting average at Santa Barbara High School, and I still have it. And I think it's the only trophy I have, or I've kept. So years and years later, I was about to shoot the movie in Durham, and I see this old guy sweating and smoking in a uniform in the dugout of the Durham Bulls, and I didn't know who it was, and I asked the player, and they said, "Oh, that's Eddie Matthews. You ever hear of him?" Well, of course, he was an iconic figure in my life, and, you know, he had a famous drinking problem, and he was now a minor league batting instructor. It just seemed like they could find something better for him to do, Hall of Famer. And I wanted to go talk to him, and then I decided to leave him alone, and I write about that in the book, and I left him there because I realized I had nothing to say to him other than go out and get drunk, which is exactly what he didn't need. So it was a big moment for me, and sometimes it's better to leave your heroes alone.
Well, it's funny how things come full circle. Ron Shelton is with us, of course, the writer-director of Bull Durham. The Church of Baseball is the book, and the book really chronicles the making of the movie. There's so many good parts of the book, and as we read the book and think back to the movie, it explains so much. But, Ron, to make a movie like this and to do a story like this, people have to know that you did have a minor league career. You were with the Orioles minor league system from 67 to 71. You came across Joe Altobelli, Cal Ripken, Bobby Gritch, Don Baylor, and all those names that we remember from that era, and that gave you the foundation to do this writing and make this movie.
Yeah, I signed in the same year as Bobby Gritch and Don Baylor, and we started out together and kind of went up through the minors together. They kept going, by the way, and I actually played 5 years and plus a winter ball in Florida, and in winter ball, our manager was Cal Ripken Sr., and our bat boy was Cal Ripken Jr. Cal and Billy were the bat boys in winter ball, but I'm still in touch with Bobby Gritch. He's from Long Beach. I'm still in touch with a lot of guys I played with in AAA. The strike hit at 72, and that's why I walked away. I couldn't afford to sit it out. But, yeah, I never got released. I just played until baseball stopped for a while.
Well, Ron Shelton with us, of course, a second baseman in the minor leagues, and that's the foundation for the story. So tell us how the story comes about.
Well, did I really want to write a book about a movie made that long ago? It would seem like I'm living in the past, which I'm not. I got all kinds of new projects in front of me. But people kept saying, you ought to hearing my stories. You ought to write a book about the stories. And then 4 years ago, I was invited to Durham for the 30th anniversary of the movie, because Durham is now a AAA stadium and an affiliate, and it was in the low minors when I did the movie. And so I went down there, and they think I'm a hero because the city has made a comeback, and they all think the movie had a lot to do with it. And anyway, so I'm there being honored, and they had a Q&A. They took 500 fans out of the 12,000, and they had a Q&A before the game. And this married couple says, Mr. Shelton, we moved to Durham because of the movie. We loved it so much. Could we take a picture of you with our two sons? And I said, of course, come on down. So I was posing with the mother, the father, and the two boys. And as the photographer took the picture, I said to the 10-year-old, what's your name? And the little boy looked at his mom, and she nodded, so like it was okay to tell Mr. Shelton your name. And he said, my name is Crash. And I looked at the younger brother, and I said, I'm afraid to ask. And he said, yep, I'm Nuke. And so the boys were named Crash and Nuke, and I guess that's why I wrote the book.
That's great, a great story. But in doing the movie, and it explains so much in the book of how you did the movie, this is your first venture into something like this. So what's the biggest hurdle you have to do? How do you even get financing for it?
Well, the biggest hurdle is getting financing. I had written two movies. I had directed Second Unit, not the main director. I felt I was ready. I put in my time. But nobody wanted to make a baseball movie about the minor leagues with a guy who'd never directed before. And even when I got Kevin Costner attached, nobody wanted to make it. It was turned down twice by every studio. And then kind of in a miraculous bottom of the ninth home run, we got the shot at the last second. And the rest is history.
Casting a movie is so interesting, how that happens. And look, you've got major people in the movie, Susan Sarandon, Kevin Costner, and others. But the casting of the movie, as you explain in the book, that's a very interesting part that you had to go through.
Yeah, it's hard to explain it in an interview like this, but the book goes into it in detail, some of the most hair-raising stories about actors' behavior and studios changing their mind. And I mean, it was quite a nightmare and a miracle that I ended up with such a great cast. Susan was not approved, and then she showed up anyway, and how she got approved is a great chapter, how she got approved by the studio. And Tim Robbins, nobody wanted. We fought for everything, and Kevin was in my corner. He had my back the whole time, which helped. But it's a very funny, and it's like a thriller, the chapter of how did we get the money together to make it.
Boy, great story. And it's all in here. The name of the movie, Bull Durham, of course, how did that name come around?
Well, it was an accident. You know, the Bull Durham Tobacco was one of the huge tobacco companies for decades. So many tobaccos in the Raleigh-Durham area. It's a tobacco area, that whole part of the country. People were catching on and cigarettes weren't great for you. And Bull Durham Tobacco had gone out of business. But there were still barns all over the South with Bull Durham ads painted on them. They were fading and peeling paint. And the team was named the Durham Bulls, many people think, because Bull Durham Tobacco was from Durham. And that's where the name. Many people think one of the leading theories of where the term bullpen comes from is there was Bull Durham advertising painted on the wall in front of where the extra pitchers were kept, first in Durham and later in the Polo Ground. So the term bullpen somehow is connected in here. When I started writing the script, I put Bull Durham on the script. I figured we'd find a better title later, and we never changed it.
Wow, interesting. Ron Shelton with us. The Church of Baseball, all this is in the book. Really, it's fascinating to hear how this came about. How did you choose Durham as the location of all the minor league places you played in, Stockton and different places? Why Durham?
Well, the producer of the movie who was from Durham, owned a piece of the team, not a major piece, but he loved minor league baseball, and most people in Hollywood didn't know anything about minor league baseball. But I didn't have to shoot there. I just loved the old town. Was kind of run down at the time. It's happening now. Durham's really popping. And the ballpark I loved. It was this small little place tucked in the neighborhoods. People walked from their homes to the game. You know, it was intimate, the way minor league baseball could be intimate. And so that's why I chose it. Never even had a second choice.
Where was the movie shot? Was it in the ballpark or other locations too?
It was in the ballpark, and then the empty tobacco warehouses that surrounded it, we used to build a couple of sets we used for our offices. And Annie's house was just a few blocks away, so basically we were all camped in one place. And then we made some one-day road trips to other towns to just get the look of the movie. We went to Rocky Mount, went to Wilson, Greensboro, place Burlington, places that had minor league teams that weren't that far away. We'd go for a day or two.
Well, a part of the book that I really like, the book is The Church of Baseball. The names of the characters in the book, of course, Annie, a baseball Annie, and Kevin Costner, Crash Davis, and it's a great story about Crash Davis. I got to meet him 2001. The A's brought him out. He was a real ball player in the major leagues, and he's Crash Davis in the movie. So tell us about that story.
Well, he turned out to be a great gentleman and became a friend, and I put him in another movie of mine until he passed away. I was reading a Carolina League record book before I ever wrote the script. Why was I reading the Carolina League record book? Because I had no life at the time, I think. And I was looking at all these names and records, and it's always kind of moving to me that you look at somebody from 1958 or 1923, and you see these numbers next to them, and you realize those numbers were who they were that year, and that there's a story behind every one of these guys. And I was looking through the doubles column, because I led a league in doubles, and I was a leadoff hitter. And no, I wasn't a home run hitter, but I hit a lot of doubles. And I see a guy hit 50 doubles one year in the minors. That's a lot of doubles in a 140-game season. And his name was Crash Davis, and he played in Durham for the Durham Bulls in 1947. I thought, Crash Davis is the coolest name ever. I wish I was named Crash Davis. So I thought, well, he's long gone. Nobody lives in the minor league town. And I typed it in, and I wrote the script. Well, then he shows the real I'm shooting, and somebody comes over and says, Crash Davis is here. I think they're talking about Costner. And no, he's the real Crash Davis. I said, ask him how many doubles he hit in 1947. They come back and say, 50. Anyway, so I then had to beg him to use his name. He turned out to be an elegant guy, had graduated from Duke, played 4 years with Connie Mack in the big leagues, mm-hmm. served in the war. I mean, one of the class acts I've ever met.
Yep, I agree. Nice man. It was really a pleasure to meet Crash Davis and, of course, talk to him when I did see him about the story that you just told. How about Nuke? Nuke LaLoosh, where did that name come from?
I was driving around the South, again, to see if the minor leagues had changed since I played. They hadn't, by the way. The major leagues had changed. Big money had come in. Major league players used to be more approachable than they were now. Press all complained. Talk to a guy, you need to go to his agent, his manager, and his publicist. Holy cow, you used to just go to the batting cage, right? Well, the minors were still the minors. And so I was realizing there was a movie to be made here. But I couldn't find a salad. Nobody eats raw vegetables in the South, at least at that time. So I thought, well, if I go to Columbia, South Carolina, that's a state capital, there'll be a hotel, restaurant. I just wanted a salad. That's all I wanted. So I go to get my salad at the Radisson in Columbia, where there's a minor league team, so I can, you know, it's part of my write-off. And this waiter comes up to me, and he says, my name is Ebby Calvin LaRouche, but you can call me Nuke.
Okay.
I am writing on a cocktail napkin as fast as I can. And I said, Nuke. And all I could think of was Don Newcomb, right? And he says, I said, how do you spell Nuke? And he says, you know, nobody ever asked me that before. And I thought, I got my guy now. But I changed LaRouche to LaLoosh because there was this wacko politician named Lyndon LaRouche. And I didn't want any part of him. So that's where he came from, a waiter in Columbia. And I keep waiting for the guy to call me.
Now, that character was patterned after a very famous minor league pitcher, and that's Steve Dalkowski, who pitched in Stockton. And they said was the fastest pitcher who ever threw It's just he didn't know where the ball was going.
Yeah, well, he was inspired by guys like that. Dalkowski got to the AAA, and they roomed him with the veteran Joe Altobelli. That was the idea of a wild flamethrower being roomed with the veteran to help mature him. That idea came from there. But there's so many hard throwers in the minors that don't know where it's going. He's really based on all of those guys. I know that you probably hear of him all the time in the Giant organization. Some guy in winter ball is throwing 104, and he'll strike out 13 and walk 13. Well, that was Dalkowski, and I knew a lot of guys like him, where the guys who end up in the Hall of Fame hit their spots and change speeds.
The book explains the script and how you did it and the shooting and the daily shooting and all the challenges. What was the biggest challenge for you as you're now making the movie and doing it each day? What was the toughest part?
Well, the studio didn't like what we were doing. That was the hardest part. They said it wasn't funny, wasn't sexy and romantic. Susan, they thought nobody would believe she would end up in bed with Tim Robbins, and to which I add now I'm the godfather of their firstborn. So all the things that the movie is sort of famous for, the studio didn't think it worked. And the studio was wrong, but I had to fight them every day of the shoot.
When this is all explained in the book, The Church of Baseball. All right, so now the movie is finished. You have a screening, and you talk about that. What was the screening like for you? Because now you've got a live audience to tell you what's good and what's bad.
Well, there's a chapter called Kill Your Darlings, and it's about everybody's favorite scene in the movie, mine included, would have got Susan the Oscar that she deserved, and why we finally cut it out of the movie. And it's about this phenomenon that happens to a lot of movie makers where you end up losing your favorite thing and the movie improves somehow. So I think it's an interesting discussion. But the big thing is the studio said that the meaning of the mound wasn't funny. And I said, the meaning of the mound is why I wrote the movie. It's the funniest scene in the movie. And they wanted to cut it out. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And they said, well, we'll let the audience tell us. And we went down to Anaheim to test screen the movie right next to the Anaheim ballpark, actually, and at a big theater, and everybody loved the meeting at the mound. And in every screening, it was the audience's favorite scene. So the audience helped me keep it in the movie.
Boy, as you explain in the book, this is a baseball movie that really never plays a game. It's more something around the game and the personalities of course, Susan Sarandon, Kevin Costner, Robert Wall, Trey Wilson, the manager. But you never really play a game.
Well, we play bits and pieces of games. We never, you know, we'll play bits and pieces of a fragment, never the first pitch, never the last pitch. At the end of the movie, you don't even know what happened to the team. Kevin, Crash Davis isn't on the team anymore. Duke isn't on the team. You have no idea what happened in this season. And that's certainly not like other sports movies.
Well, you got a lot of accolades for it, and you do explain some of the ones you got. And you were nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, but you didn't win it, and you explained that night in the book.
I like to forget about that night. we'd won the National Critics, L.A. Critics, New York Critics. We won everything, a Writers Guild. So we were favored, but we lost to Rain Man. The problem is I'd flown out because I was in pre-production on a movie called Blaze in Louisiana, and I'd come out just for this night. And this was the famous night that Rob Lowe danced with Snow White. You may remember it as possibly the worst Oscar show ever. And I'm sitting in like the third row because the writers are up front. And the Best Original Screenplay award is like really early in the show. So once you lose, you got to sit there for 3.5 hours waiting not only to leave, but to get on a 5 a.m., get to the airport at 5 a.m. to fly back to Louisiana. So it was not the greatest night I've ever had, but we're still talking about the movie, so that's all that matters.
Well, it's great, but you did lose to 1 minute to Wapner. That's a tough one. I think you did a lot better job than Rain Man. I will tell you that. It's a great book because it really takes you behind the scenes of making, as I said when we started the discussion, my favorite baseball movie of all time. And you realize how hard it is to make a movie and dealing with the studio, the financial part, the characters, the location. all that, did you have any idea what you were getting into when you started this movie?
Well, I did, because I worked on two movies, The Best of Times with Kurt Russell and Robin Williams that I wrote, and Under Fire, which I wrote. I was on the set every day. I was working on the picture. I know it's tough, but in those cases, we generally had more support from the studio. So I was aware of most of the problems, and I think having made your living as a professional baseball player prepares you for the long season, don't get too up, don't get too down. All of those cliches are useful, and I wasn't prepared for the studio to tell me it wasn't funny and it wasn't sexy and it wasn't romantic and nobody would believe Susan would get into bed with Tim Robbins. Because how do you say, you can't argue and say, yeah, it's funny, trust me. So that was the part that was dispiriting. You know, I will say, finally, they got behind it when it was done and finished and they saw people laughing and cheering. But it took that long for them to get behind it.
Well, the book explains all of that. One last part in the book that I really enjoyed was how you chose the announcer, the broadcaster, who handled the games. How did you do that?
Well, I wanted a real Southern voice, not a New York or Hollywood actor faking a North Carolina accent. And it was about 3 days before shooting, and I couldn't figure out who to hire for this guy. And I was about midnight, I fell asleep in bed in front of the TV. And when I woke up, the David Letterman show was still on. And there was a guy sitting there talking, and he had the most richest Southern drawl ever, and he wouldn't shut up. And David Letterman, who likes to, you know, dominate conversations, he had to push his chair back and sit back and let this guy go. And he was a revenue agent from North Carolina, and a book had just been written about him. So I called the casting director in New York the next morning, and I said, find out who that guy was on David Letterman. And where I can find him, he's my perfect announcer. And she calls back, said, well, he lives in Scotland Neck, North Carolina. He's a famous moonshine agent, undercover agent. I said, well, how can you be a famous undercover agent? That doesn't make sense. And he was back from New York already. I went up and saw him and met him, had dinner with him and his wife, and hired him. And we became dear friends, and I used him in the movie, in Blaze, the next movie I made.
Wow, great story. There's so many stories in this book explaining how Bull Durham came together and also the background of Ron Shelton, because you don't do a movie like this unless you're a real baseball person. So it's a pleasure having you on the show. We, of course, support our local bookstore, Montclair, our independent bookstore. David has got it at the Book Tree, and I'm sure you could get it at all the outlets. But, Ron, it's a pleasure to have you on. And as I said when we started, it's still my favorite baseball movie, and I'm glad I could read the book and find out how it all came together. So appreciate your being on.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That is Ron Shelton, The Church of Baseball. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, The Sports Leader.